The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So why don't I'll start talking. Hopefully Professor Grossman will grace us with his presence. And if not, I will do my best Professor Grossman impression, which is not very good. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Steve Vladek. I teach constitutional law to some of you. Federal courts, national security law. In the fall, I'm teaching a seminar on military courts in Article 3, and the purpose of this section is to give you guys a chance to both receive advice about and ask more targeted questions about regulatory, administrative, and constitutional law offerings at WCL. Hopefully, we're in the right place. This sounds familiar. Good. All right. So, you guys are all rising 2Ls, is that right? You're not used to being called rising 2Ls, do you like? We have to pass our one-on classes first, and then, you know. So let me just say a little bit about the curriculum in general, and then I'll talk about a couple of specific classes, and then I'm just happy to throw it open to your questions. So the curriculum in general. So WCL has an incredibly rich upper-level curriculum when it comes to regulatory, administrative, and constitutional law courses, but not an obvious one. What I mean by that is it actually takes a little bit of digging through the curriculum to see just how wide-ranging some of our offerings are. So, for example, we don't have, you know, the sort of as many obvious big, large survey upper-level electives in constitutional law. The only one we have is First Amendment. But there are a lot of smaller seminars. So Professor Ramil, for example, will teach his Supreme Court class. Professor Schwartz teaches a class about the Constitution in times of crisis. There are sort of more specialized disciplinary seminars like employment discrimination, feminist jurisprudence, critical race theory, education law. I mean, these are all sort of, you know, hybrids of con law and sort of statutory regulatory schemes. And so I think one of the keys, if you're interested in more con law type courses, is to look at the smaller courses earlier and, you know, more often. Right, that instead of perhaps waiting for your third year to look at like a con law seminar, you know, maybe see if there are things that are available for you fall and spring of your second year. With administrative law, the same thing. Obviously, we have the basic administrative law class, which is a very good place to start for those of you who are interested in advanced upper-level administrative law work. I think admin's actually a fantastic class almost no matter what you do, but especially if you're interested in government and or government-related work. And I'm happy to make invidious comparisons among our admin professors later, if you'd like, in response to questions. But again, with admin, right? I mean, admin is the big admin-y class, and then there are a bunch of smaller electives. So for example, we have an adjunct who teaches a fantastic course on mass communications law, which is a hyper-specialized body of administrative law. It's just basically the FCC, right? The Federal Communications Commission. We have advanced environmental law classes. Environmental law is largely, although not entirely, administrative law. And so, you know, environmental law is very much a sort of admin advanced implementation course. You know, and the same is true for all. Professor Metcalf teaches a really interesting class on government information law and privacy, which is very much about how the government keeps information secret. So we spend a lot of time in that class talking about FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, and related things like that. And so on and so forth. So again, right, it's sort of, you know, there aren't as many big survey course upper level offerings as you might see in, for example, the business law, international law, or IP programs, but there's a lot of curricular diversity. And then regulatory, I mean, I kind of think of regulatory as sort of part and parcel of admin. But, you know, regulatory is sort of now we're getting into specific areas of law, right? So mass communications, environmental, food and drugs, some of you guys I think are in Professor Grossman's 1L elected now, you know, courses like that. So, you know, I think the question is not, you know, what's out there. The question is sort of, where does it stop? We have an incredibly rich program, but it's all, as I say, focused more at the smaller upper-level courses, which is both good for you and bad for you, right? It's good for you in that you can actually start doing some really cool specialized work right away, right? We don't have lots of prerequisites in the admin, regulatory, con law world. It's bad insofar as because these classes are smaller, getting into them as a fall 2L may be a bit harder, right, than, say, a 75-person VA class, or something like that. So I think the key for you guys is if you're interested in these areas, you got to be strategic, right? Get on the wait list for these classes now. You know, hope you can get off them in the fall, but at the very worst, you know, plan to take them in the spring or the following fall. Because I think the one thing that sets apart the con law admin regulatory chunk of our curriculum is the lack of sequencing. Right? This is not, you know, in the business law program, there's actually a series of courses that are sequenced where you've got to take one and then the next and then the next. There are almost no classes like that on the public law side of things, right? So you can take federal courts whenever. You can take conflicts whenever. You can take admin whenever. They're all helpful for each other, but unless this something has changed since last I looked, we require none of them as prerequisites for the other. So just something to keep in mind as you're considering what's out there. So I guess I mean that's sort of the bare bones structure. I mean, I think this is probably gonna be more useful if I just answer your questions. So, you know, what kinds of questions do you have? That was my very long spiel.
Okay. So you said you would make comments about the different professors for that admin law class. I'm in one of the public law electives right now. I get the impression that when you take a class like that, you're going to get kind of that professor's focus.
That's often true, right? I mean, so for example, if you take admin with Professor Leiter, it's probably going to be very environmental heavy. But, you know, I mean, I don't know that that's a bad thing, right? I mean, so for example, when I was in law school, my administrative law professor also taught an environmental law heavy admin class. You know, how you teach admin, I think, very much is less important than that you teach it well. And, you know, you're going to have to learn admin through some particular regime. There are a lot of reasons why environmental makes sense. There are reasons why, you know, communications make sense. There are reasons why, gosh, would be a funny one, tax. You could actually teach admin as a tax class. I don't know why you would, but you could. So I wouldn't worry too much about the substantive focus of an admin class because, you know, I think no matter what you're going to learn admin, I think it's just that we have very different styles among our admin colleagues. And so it's more a question of which style suits you, the student, the best.
So I saw a listing for the law of the sea. Did that fall?
Law of the sea.
Did that fall under administrative category? Or
no, I mean the law of the sea is more international law. So you know, there's a treaty called the Convention on the Law of the Sea, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which the U.S. is one of the few countries in the world that hasn't ratified.
So is it relevant at all to take it?
Is it relevant? I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's really neat. I think it's. You know, if you're a public law person, if government, regulatory, admin stuff is what you want to do, I'm not sure it'll be that useful. But, you know, I think there's a lot of neat stuff there. And so I can certainly think of less interesting classes. But I think it is a bit sort of more on the international law side of the world.
Do you know who teaches it and your opinion might be that person?
I think it's an adjunct. And I tend not to know the adjuncts very well. Sorry.
Yeah. So seminars, some are only offered in the fall, some are only offered in the spring. Is that right?
That's right. Okay. And I mean, so the two variables for seminars, you know, there are some seminars that are taught by multiple professors. There are some that only one professor is going to teach, and it's rare that the same professor is going to teach a seminar twice in 1 year. I mean, the way that our course packages are set up, we're at most supposed to teach one seminar a year, and really it's a seminar every other year. So odds are if there's one particular professor seminar that you want to take and you don't get into it this coming fall, you may have to wait a full year for it. But let me just say, I mean, I've said this to my con law students, but I'll say this to all of you. I'm a firm believer in perseverance on the wait list. I mean, I've had students in my classes who were like in the 40s on the wait list who got in. You know, every semester, by the end of ad drop, I have a couple of spaces in all my classes, even though it was, quote, full, unquote. So don't listen to what the registrar's office tells you, right? Get on the wait list, and if you really want to be in the class, go to the class the first week of school, stick it out, because it's tight. And, you know, usually that should work. Now, if it's a 7-person class with a 95-person wait list, that might be harder. But don't give up just because you're on the wait list.
It seems like there's a lot of upper level seminars related to health law,
yep.
Like regulation in particular. Mm-hmm. Are there other industries that like might pop up? Like I saw there's only one for aviation, there's like an oil and gas.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing is, the one of the things that you guys have probably figured out about WCL by now is that we have a lot of programs. It's hard to keep them all straight sometimes. And one of the biggest ones is our health law program. And so the health law program is directly responsible for the large number of upper-level health law offerings you see in the curriculum, some of which, by the way, I think are really awesome, even if you're not that into health law. But the flip side is that I think that's unique to health law, right? That, you know, you'll see where there's a program, you'll see a bunch of courses in that area. So health law, you know, we have the International Environmental Program. We have PIGIP, right, the Program on Information Justice and Intellectual Property. So we have a whole bunch of upper-level IP courses. The industry which we don't have programs, I think you're going to see more likely one or two electives. So aviation is a good example of that. Oil and gas, although Professor Day is legendary. But I think there's less curricular diversity in those areas just because there's less institutional support for it at the law school. And then also I think factors into when you might take them, right? So it's a good bet that there's going to be plenty of health law courses offered each semester. Courses like aviation and oil and gas and space law, probably not offered, you know, every semester. Yeah,
Can you explain to me the role, like, what the curriculum is for, like, the federal courts, of course, since you teach it?
Sure. So federal courts. I teach it and Professor Frost teaches it. It is the world's most awesome and terrifying class. If you ask around, you'll probably hear people refer to it as the organic chemistry of law school, which only further proves that we're not chemists, since we don't understand what organic chemistry is. But so federal courts. Professor Frost and I teach it a little differently, but not that much. And the basic idea is it's sort of a weird combination between like advanced civ pro and advanced con law. And the idea is to sort of study the power of the federal courts as such. So in civ pro, you know, you guys may have painful memories of this, but you spend a lot of time talking about like litigation strategy. You know, the plaintiff wants to file in this court, can he? You know, you learn about subject matter jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, Erie. So Fed courts is like the deeper Fed court stuff from the perspective of the judges. So the constitutional limits on federal courts, the power of Congress over the federal courts, the relationship between federal courts and state courts, and then a whole lot of stuff about remedies, about the ability of federal courts to provide relief, especially when it's a officer, a government officer who's violating an individual rights. I spend a lot of time on habeas. Professor Frost spends a little less time on habeas. Let me ask a question that is probably not going to be a useful question. How many of you guys took calculus at some point in your lives? Any of you take analysis? All right, so calculus is where you learn and apply the fundamental theorem of calculus. Federal courts is where you prove it. Right, that's the description I like to use, right? That Fed courts is sort of proving why the federal courts work the way they do. And so in that regard, it's actually a fantastic survey course because you learn a whole bunch of substantive areas, you're exposed to a whole bunch of substantive issues while your focus is really on the power of the federal courts and the limitations on that power. So that's part of why it's so cool, it's also part of why it's so hard. It's so wide-ranging, and really it comes at the law from a very different perspective than most of your other classes, right? Most of your other classes, it's like, learn this body of law. Federal courts is, learn how this institution applies every body of law. And so that's what makes it sort of fun and impossible. Laura?
So these different courses, would you recommend taking them when we're still trying to, I think talk about this a little bit about
I think it's a great question, right? So, you know, is it better to take a class like Fed Courts, or I would throw admin right into that category, earlier or later? And I think it's really just a question of the fit in your schedule and your personality type. There's no question in my mind that Fed Courts and admin will be a little bit harder for you as a first semester 2L than as a first semester 3L. It's just because you will have been exposed to less. More will seem new to you. I think they'll be a little bit harder to 2L. The flip side is, getting them under your belt, you know, I think will be so useful for your other courses. You know, they're not prerequisites for anything, but they help to sort of, you know, show so much of how the world really works that I think there's a benefit to that cost, right? And the benefit is, you know, having this advanced understanding, having this advanced education go into the rest of your classes. So I think it's just a trade-off. I've had 2Ls do very well in my federal courts class, so as Professor Frost, I've had 3Ls slack off and come down with a very nasty case of 3L-itis. I think it's just a question of what you want to do and when you want to do it. I have no doubt 2Ls can handle it. I also have no doubt, you know, you would be fine waiting. It's just a question of what makes sense for you.
And this obviously depends a lot on what you want to do after law school, but is there a risk, and how much of a risk, to kind of overdoing it in this con law area? Does that question make sense?
There's always a, I mean, so let me say, I think there's always a risk of having your schedule be, you know, health law one, health law two, health law three, advanced health law, right? I mean, like, having, I mean, if you're absolutely sure you want to do something, then there's no risk, right? Then you're just going there. I don't know that there's enough straight con law in our syllabus that you could actually ever run that risk. Right? I mean, so realistically, the straight con law courses you guys can take as upper level students are First Amendment and seminars. And so I think as long as you don't just take like four seminars on like constitutional theory, which I don't even think we have, you know, I think it's a risk to be conscious of, but that's going to be very hard to actually take on, given the way the syllabus is set up. You know, as long, I mean, I think in general, as long as your schedule is balanced sort of from a credit and type of class perspective, it'll automatically be balanced for common law just because of how skewed our offerings are towards seminars. And let me back up. I mean, the other thing I'm going to say about this is if you guys are interested in, like, you know, government slash regulation slash con law jobs, you know, no one would think about a transcript that was heavy in, like, con law admin bed courts as sort of one-sided, right? Like, those are, you know, those are the building blocks for everything that is public law. And so it's only if you really do it, like, First Amendment, First Amendment, First Amendment, more First Amendment, and then some First Amendment, so you run into that trouble. Hello. So that's my thought on that. We're up to questions, but if you have a spiel.
Sorry I'm late. I was in office hours and swept away by a compelling discussion.
We've been having a compelling discussion of our upper level regulatory electives.
So, I don't really know what to say. So have you spoken about regulatory as well as constitutional already?
I think so.
Have you spoken about how many of you are currently in a first year elective related to administrative law or regulatory? Okay. So most of you already have that. You know, because there is the question of, do you take ad law before taking specific regulatory classes, or do you take specific regulatory classes before taking ad law? I'm kind of agnostic on that. I think it can work well either way. But I do think that if you want to become a regulatory lawyer, you should definitely take ad law. That goes without saying. And you're allowed to take administrative law even if you took the public law first year elective, I think, right? Not preempted from doing that.
Nope.
And I think it probably makes sense to do that. Questions? I don't really have a set presentation.
So what else am I telling you?
Ask me anything.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Please
start first.
I didn't read. Okay. Sorry. All right.
Because this is a class where participation points matter.
I was looking at the appellate advocacy class. Uh-huh. So in situations of like con law or regulation, like regulatory law, I feel like you'd be litigating a little bit.
True. Often, not necessarily, but often.
So, I mean, do you think that's useful?
I mean, so I think appellate advocacy is useful, you know, as long as you think you might want to do any kind of appellate work. And appellate work doesn't just mean appellate litigation, right? I mean, like, you know, agencies are routinely involved in defending appeals, right, and sort of contemplating appeal. I mean, appellate advocacy is sort of a shorthand for purely legal advocacy, right, as opposed to trial ad, which is much more, you know, discovery and evidence-oriented and witness testimony and things like that. And so if you are interested in purely legal kinds of jobs, I think appellate advocacy is a great class, because that's what you're going to be doing. It may not be writing a brief and arguing before a circuit court, but it's going to be, you know, answering discrete questions of law based upon existing precedents, and that's all that appellate advocacy is. So, you know, I think appellate advocacy is actually a great class for any number of reasons. And you don't have to be like have your heart set on being the next Tom Goldstein to take that class.
You know Tom Goldstein?
No.
So Tom Goldstein is one of our more famous alums these days, class 96. Who's a prominent Supreme Court litigator who runs, among other things, SCOTUS blog. So there you go. Kim?
What do you recommend in terms of balancing between, like, have more of an interest in regulatory compliance on the private side.
Sure.
So what do you recommend in terms of balancing like regulatory admin classes and then like business law type classes or?
It's a great question. I mean, I think the best way to answer it is just a balance, right? I mean, I think, you know, as I said earlier, you know, our business law curriculum is more structured and more sequenced. And so I think you're going to want to map that out a little more carefully, you know, especially if they're upper level electives with regard to compliance that may require a couple of prerequisites like BA and securities regulation, things like that. But, you know, I think as long as you're sort of, how do I put this, strategic about it, you should be fine. But I mean, because I think, you know, I think your intuition is right that you want to do both. You want to hit both the admin side and the internal corporate side too.
You know, like, so if your ultimate goal is to maybe be working in-house for a regulated industry, it certainly makes all the sense in the world to take BA, tax. I mean, the fact of the matter is that if you work in a huge company, then your tasks as a counsel within the company might be very discreet, like you might be a food and drug lawyer within Pfizer. But the fact of the matter is if you are either at a smaller company or if you rise to the very top of even a big company, then your concerns as a counsel end up being everything. And if I were interviewing somebody to be regulatory counsel at a company and they couldn't talk very, very smoothly about, you know, employment issues and corporate law issues, I would think they'd be a less good candidate.
Actually, yeah, and I just had, I mean, right to that, I mean, I think the last one said is so, right, if you got to think about going in-house, employment is never a bad thing. Right, labor and employment law is, you know, some people think it's a dying industry, but it's not.
What general courses would you recommend for that?
Well, there's a class called labor and employment law. and then the other one to think about is Professor Carl, among others, just employment discrimination. Those are different classes. I mean, right, employment discrimination is part of labor and employment law, but labor and employment law is sort of much more oriented on, like, the regulatory side of it, and then employment discrimination is much more about Title VII. And so, you know, if sort of in-house counsel is your vision, I think labor and employment is the more important class than employment discrimination. But I think both of them would be useful.
And let me just also add that the path to in-house counsel, you know, as the legal industry changes in an almost a revolutionary way, it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen. It used to be that the path to in-house counsel was almost always through a law firm. It may be changing as more and more companies are keeping things in-house as opposed to farming them out to law firms. And in fact, I have two students this summer who have first-year summer associate positions within corporations. So, but to the degree that it's still a good path to go to a law firm and then, you know, then meet your clients and then go in-house, BA, you know, what law firm employers are looking for is, you know, they would want to see those bread and butter classes, I think, out there.
One thing I would say is,
and by bread and butter, I mean like tax and BA.
One of the thoughts is, I mean, this is going to sound odd coming in the middle of a regulatory and common law session, but, you know, if sort of that's your kind of career path, I also wouldn't count out property. You know, a lot of what the sort of the counsel's offices in these companies and corporations do is property like landlord-tenant law, right? You know, because they have to deal with, you know, contracts for their property. They have to buy and sell, you know, real and personal. I mean, there's more property than you would think, and there are never enough lawyers with really good property credentials. So,
but also say that it's not that frequently that I've met a law student who says, and my goal in life is to become in-house counsel, and I'm going to start structuring my life around that. And again, that might be changing with the changing employment picture. But I think that we may be getting a little bit too detailed about imagining you as the actual you know, general counsel of a company.
In 13 years. Anyway, just think about that. Yeah.
So you said taking appellate advocacy, you don't have to be the next Tom Goldstein. But if you want to be the next Tom Goldstein, what's appellate advocacy to? I mean, is there one? Like, I already am going towards that class. I mean,
so Professor Wormale from time to time teaches a Supreme Court seminar, which actually has a very specific focus, not just on the course and institution, but on litigating before the court. Which, you know, I think is, I mean, if you're really into the Tom Goldstein oath, I think that's the class that probably suits it the best. Realistically, though, I mean, if it's sort of like high-level litigation that you're attracted to, I think Fed Court, Fed Admin, you know.
Have you said Fed Courts yet, by the way?
I just said Fed Courts.
No, before just this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because Fed Courts is, you know.
I was asked this Friday.
Yeah, no, that definitely take Fed Courts if you're interested.
With Professor Frost.
If you're interested in administrative law, if you're interested in litigation, if you're interested in any of this stuff, it's actually in certain ways an advanced common law class, an advanced ad law class, or not an advanced ad law class, but a species of ad law class. It's also advanced civ pro. It's a great class, and we have, don't blush when I say this, two of the best teachers at our school teach it. So. And Steve, you also, I think, teaches it.
You know, the court took a case on Younger abstention.
What?
The Supreme Court today took a case on Younger abstention, which is like the most obscure random federal court doctrine that no one cares about. But now they do. But now we will. Yeah.
During our comments here, talk about code classes that we should take. I kind of forgot what those are. What's an example?
So, I mean, this is sort of getting a bit, well, actually, it's sort of in the ballpark of regulatory. So code classes is a shorthand term for courses that are about a very discrete body of substantive law wholly encompassed within one set of statutes, right? So it's sort of like the opposite of a common law course, like contracts, torts, property, where it's a whole lot of judicial decisions interpreting common law principles. Because so examples of code classes are tax, securities regulation, antitrust,
food and drug law.
Food and drug law, that's right. Did I say bankruptcy yet? If not, bankruptcy. You know, these are all sort of bodies of law where everything comes from a statute. And what's neat about those classes is both getting a chance to learn one area like that in real detail, but also it's a different kind of legal interpretation. Right? All you're really doing at that point is statutory interpretation to implement, to manifest, to bring to fruition the policy goal underlying the code. You know, that's why tax actually I think is interesting. Right? Tax is really just sort of the implementation of social policy through monetary policy.
Fiscal policy.
Today's a bad day to talk about taxes, I know. But I think code classes are useful in general, even if you're not interested in that particular area, just because it's a great exposure to solving legal problems through one statute. Which also leads me to plug one other class that I don't think is being offered in the fall, but that will be offered in the spring, which is legislation. Right? Legislation is a more general statutory interpretation class, so as opposed to a code class where it's like, go read, you know, the Food and Drug Act, go read the Bankruptcy Code. Legislation is sort of how do we read statutes in general? How do we read regulations? And the reality is we don't do nearly enough in law school to teach you how to read laws. We teach you how to read cases, but we don't do nearly enough to teach you how to read laws. And legislation is a great class for developing your skills with that, especially if you're interested in this general field.
Have you mentioned First Amendment?
I mentioned that. That's the one big common law elective.
Yeah. So First Amendment is
not a code class.
Not a code class. It's been squeezed out of the regular common law classes. Common law classes have been shrunk, and everything's gotten bigger. It is an incredibly important field. And when I went to law school, what I thought about when I thought about the First Amendment was, war protest cases and obscenity cases, and those are all still very important. But there's an unbelievable amount of action in two areas in particular that are just suffusing the regulatory state and politics in the country. One is political speech and contributions. and the other is commercial free speech. And anyone who's in my food and drug class this semester knows darn well that you can't be a food and drug lawyer without knowing the First Amendment anymore. And that's true, I imagine, in increasingly different fields, whether you're an FTC lawyer or even an SEC lawyer. It's something that just, if, you know, whether you want to be a constitutional lawyer or a regulatory lawyer, it's very important to know.
Jesse?
So I think right now, because I'm not 100% sure that I want to kind of go the national security law path, and you were mentioning before how there's not really a set structure of which classes to take in relation to which. Would you recommend classes for next semester, aside from your military course class, that might fall into those?
So, you know, next semester is actually the first semester in a while where we're not offering the basic national security course. We usually offer every semester. It will definitely be offered in spring. And so I would actually heavily encourage you to start there. You know, I would say for the fall, I would sort of look around for seminars that look interesting. You know, there are a bunch of sort of national security-ish seminars. So, you know, Professor Schwartz teaches the Constitution in Times of Crisis. Professor Perahit teaches a class on human rights advocacy in the war on terrorism.
And we just hired a great new...
Right, Professor Daskal will be here next year. He's going to probably teach a national security elective in the spring. In addition to the core national security law class, which I think Professor Marcus will teach in the spring. So, you know, I think for the fall, Jesse, I would sort of go with what looks interesting and expect the sort of the core, the more core sort of certain courses to be on the calendar in the spring.
Okay. Thank you.
We were kind of told in our commons that, like, BA and tax can be good for you no matter where you end up. Would you echo that sentiment?
So are vitamins.
Blanketly.
Half of these guys have already heard my spiel. So, you know, I think lots of classes can be good for you no matter where you end up, insofar as whether you have to take them. So I think those are two different questions, right? One is, I don't know what to take, this looks interesting, right? Then, of course, BA and tax are useful courses. You know, even if you never want to do corporate law, right, you're going to learn a lot about how the world works from BA and tax. Insofar as, must I take them before I graduate? I think the only class that falls into that category that we don't make you take is evidence.
Evidence, I agree.
And the only reason why that's true, and there's no fancy reason why that's true. The reason why it's true is because evidence is on the multi-state. And everything else is on the multi-state we make you take. BA and tax are useful. You know, I think Fed Courts is useful. I think, you know, admin is useful. I would not put them in the you must take them or you will die category, the way that I would put evidence there.
I mean, the thing about it, I didn't take BA, it was called Corporations, when I went to law school, where I went to law school. And I didn't take it partly because I kind of had this attitude, it's like, well, I'm not interested in that money stuff. You know, I'm interested in theory and policy and things like that. And it was dumb for me not to take it on the one hand, because if you really want to understand American society, understanding the structure of corporations is incredibly important. The flip side is I haven't, as I've gone through life, found it a particularly difficult subject to kind of pick up.
Well, so you've done really badly for yourself, given that you didn't
I mean, so I would say that choosing between BA and tax, in terms of which one you'll simply know a lot more about for the rest of your life if you take it in law school than if you don't, it's tax. Now, that said, what you learn in tax is personal income tax. And you're not going to get paid for the most part for doing personal income tax.
You're not saying money by doing your own taxes.
Yeah, but that said, you learn certain basic notions about just the way the tax system works that will immediately be able to engage you in discussions about corporate tax and things like that too. And whether you're going to business yourself or just working for a corporation or are dealing with the tax implications for a client about some other policy decision, I just think it's a helpful thing. And to this day, I mind paying my taxes, but I don't mind filling out my tax form because I continue to remember and think about things I learned about way back in law school when I was doing it.
We've answered all your questions. Really?
it's kind of off topic for what this particular advisement session is about, but I was thinking.
Well, we're both the kind of people who are really shy about expressing our thoughts on so.
I was thinking about wills, trusts, and estates just because it sounds practical, just like a life skill, and I noticed it was 4 credits. You recommend that?
So wills, trusts, and estates, I mean, it's, I actually think that falls really neatly into the category Professor Grossman just described, which is to say, it's a course that's practical, it's a course actually that has some, you know, it actually has math problems in it, which I think is actually really fun. I mean, I was a math major, but no, not like, you know, not like, yeah, not like integrate this. It's like, you know, if you have 3 kids and you want to leave a 42%, I mean, you know, it's algebra. No? Okay, anyway. But what I was going to say about this is there's a lot, I mean, it like tax, right? You will learn things that will be useful to you for the rest of your life, right? You will understand how wills work. You will understand how trusts work. Hopefully one
and
day.
And by the way, you'll end up being even more happy that you learn how trusts work than you learn how wills work. Because the way wills work isn't particularly
complicated.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, and hopefully you'll be lucky enough in your lives to need to know how estates work. You know, we're not all that lucky. But I will say this, I think wills, trusts, and estates falls neatly into the category Professor Grossman just described, which is a body of law that's not that hard to pick up. Right, what I mean by that is I never took it in law school. I went to a law school that doesn't even require property.
Law school doesn't even require law.
Well, that too. right, it's law school. But, you know, I learned it in bar brief. And picked it up pretty quickly because it's not the most intricate, complicated body of law. It's just, you know, it's interesting stuff, and I think it's, you know, it's useful. I mean, I don't know.
Why is there 4 credits in?
I think there's a lot of it, right? I mean,
wills it up because actually there's an incredible amount. I don't think that Steve was suggesting that he picked it up easily in Barbary because there's not much of it.
No.
In fact, I remember I remember spending, in terms of the non, I took the New York bar, and in terms of the non-multi-state subjects, I remember spending more time learning family law and wills and trusts than any other two subjects.
I took the New York bar and feel the same way. But I also feel like I learned a lot, right? And so, so I wouldn't feel compelled to take it. If you have room in a class for 4 credits, class. I mean, if you have room in your schedule for 4 credit class, then it fits. You know, I would look at the evaluations of the professors because I think you'll see a little bit of range among our colleagues with regard to
that. Yeah, I would say that, I don't know if you got to say this, in general, I think shopping for professors is incredibly important, that a good professor can make any subject a valuable one to take. And
a bad one can suck the life out of it.
Suck up anything, yeah. We don't have bad professors, though, so that's
none.
What
I
do.
I was just, as far as, like, appellate practice, minute questions of law, that kind of thing. Something that I've heard 2 different things on is, one, I've heard that no one really does appellate practice in the sense that you want to take a client, you want to keep a client, you want to take them all the way through, and so that when you're thinking about employment, you can't really just, I do con law. That just doesn't exactly exist. Or I only do appellate practice. Well, maybe. And then again, I mean, at some of the firms or whatever, they have an appellate spot. I guess, how does that play out into employment? Like, how do you translate First Amendment seminar to something you're going to actually use?
Well, I mean, so I think the problem with the first statement was its categorical nature, right? It's certainly not that common that lawyers are just appellate specialists, right? Because realistically, you know, you're going to want if it's an employment case, you're going to want the employment lawyers. If it's a tax case, you're going to want the tax lawyers, right? But there is in D.C. especially, I mean, I think it's more true here than even in New York, there is such a thing as appellate practice. And in the old days, this was actually a code word for Supreme Court practice, but now they've actually given up the ghost and admit that they have separate Supreme Court practices, too. And the idea is it's increasingly true for big companies and for clients with lots of money that even though they'll have specialists in the trial court, they're going to want appellate experts in the appeals court. So there's a lot more room for appellate lawyers. The flip side is those jobs tend to be pretty elitist, right, insofar as the kinds of credentials that usually, you know, you can find in those who are hired, which means it's probably a little bit harder for us to send you guys onto those jobs, at least straight out of law school, than we'd like, right? And that is true for a lot of other litigation.
But first of all, at the very least, I don't think that anybody would ever get a job like that right out of without a circuit court clerkship first.
That's what I was going to say.
And certainly we send people to circuit court clerkships, but you'll know by the end of clerkship hiring season whether or not you have any kind of realistic chance to get into an appellate practice, because if you don't get the circuit court clerkship, you won't be able to do it.
But that's what I was going to say, right, which is that I think if that's your goal, you know, the first step isn't actually isn't so much worry about which courses you're taking, so much as are you putting yourself in a good position to apply for a clerkship. And, you know, Professor Grossman's right. I mean, I think if you want to go straight to an appellate practice job, a circuit clerkship is going to be pretty much a prerequisite. But there are plenty of people who end up in those kinds of jobs, right, who start doing other things, who pursue other kinds of clerkships. You know, I think that the larger point, and I've said this in other contexts, is if federal litigation is something that interests you, you know, whether it's a government on the government side or on the private side, whatever, you should really consider a clerkship. It doesn't have to be a federal circuit clerkship, it doesn't have to be a federal clerkship, but just a clerkship in general, because it's such great experience, and it's sort of a way, it's a line on the resume that shows to the potential employer how serious you are about litigation. And how much practical experience you will have had seeking litigation, you know, up close and personal. So,
how hard is it to get a job at civil appellate in justice?
Hard. I mean, you know, so
because there's also appellate specialists within the government as well.
Right. So the honors program at DOJ, which, you know, thanks to the sequester, is on harder times than it used to be. Right. I mean, every year we've had a few students who get, you know, honor interviews in the honors program to go work in the appellate section of the civil division. And that's straight appellate lawyer. So, you know, I think there aren't that many jobs out there, but certainly do exist. Because it's in time. Yeah.
Well, running off the shop for professors, do you guys know anything about Professor Daskal? Because I know she hasn't taught crim pro before, but I've read her.
So first of all, I mean, I know her very well, and I think she'll be great. But let me sort of share a larger piece of wisdom, which is brand new tenure track professors are never a bad thing. Because they're going to care more, and they're going to be more sort of like into you than they will ever be again in their careers. That's not to say that we don't love you and we're not into you and we don't care about you deeply, but you know, there's a comfort level you get over time.
But especially somebody like her who just has years of experience, and in other words, like some schools, unlike us, will just hire somebody, go to law school, do a clerkship, start teaching. I wouldn't necessarily say that person. What?
Hi.
Yeah. What? Yeah. No. But we didn't hire you. We hired you only after you've been teaching in Miami for a while.
Oh, so I can screw it up over there.
Yeah. So I'm saying. So there's not the same guarantee. I'm sure he was fantastic the first day he walked into class. But somebody like Jen is, you know, I mean, she not only has she just been doing a million things, she's even like sort of been a press figure and things like that. So
she's been teaching at Georgetown. I mean, yeah. So I wouldn't, you know, there are times I'm worried about a brand new professor, but this isn't one of them.
Can you also provide any insight on Professor Lover's vision?
Yeah, look, we probably shouldn't go to talking to somebody who's never been here. Is one thing. Starting to like compare professors for specific classes, I won't say anything but good things about anyone publicly.
Which won't be useful.
Yeah. But I will tell you that Jeff Lovers is the nation's leading expert on administrative rulemaking. He is a treasure to this institution that he is here.
And I'll just say, I mean, you guys should learn how to read the evaluations carefully, right? I mean, it may just look like a whole lot of numbers. If you go look at the old evaluations and like, what the hell is the difference between a 4.7 and a 4.5? That's the difference. There's enough data, especially for professors who have been here for a while, that those differences should mean something to you. And if you see upper level professors who are pulling, you know, 4.2s, 4.1s, under 4s in classes that no one was required to take, that should be a warning sign. Can I say that without getting in trouble?
I think you're unsafe ground.
Okay. Caleb.
I kind of had two questions. One was going off the crim pro. Did you ever figure out the Davis, like Angela versus?
Yeah, it's weird. The syllabus has some Professor Davis on there who apparently is not Angela for crim pro.
Ethan Davis, yeah. Says he's from Yale. I don't. And graduate from Yale.
So that's my rhetoric professor.
He is
not teaching crim pro because I did ask him that.
Yeah, so that's
his bio.
So it is Angela.
So
it's Angela. Okay. And my second question.
That's what I thought, but no.
Yeah, I don't know if they just...
I think the IT people just didn't realize that there were two professors, Davis.
Yeah, people said it for it anyways, probably thinking of Angela. Which they're right, apparently.
And I am not Claudio Grossman, I just want to
ask. The second question was, the only kind of second step constitutional classes that take this semester, from what I gathered, is the First Amendment in federal courts. Is there any other? And
some seminars. I mean, I think with the, so First Amendment and Fed Courts are the two sort of pure upper level, you know, advanced common law survey courses, like lecture courses. There are a bunch of common law E seminars. And then a bunch of the smaller classes sort of have big common law elements. So employment script has a decent amount of equal protection in it. Professor Epperson's teaching education law, right, there's some common law in that. But if the question is sort of pure upper level common law, you know, we've taught from time to time a separation of powers elective, we're not teaching that in the fall. Foreign relations law, things like that, which will probably be on the catalog sometime while you're here, there's not on the catalog this fall. So for the big courses, common law, First Amendment Fed Courts.
All right, so for national security, wait till fall, or till spring, essentially, for us.
Yep. Garrett?
So, I know you said to read the description of the syllabus for your military courts class before asking questions, so I did, and it sounds really interesting.
Uh-oh.
But how would it be, do you have any advice, like, would it be applicable outside of, like, theoretical academic?
Sure. I mean, I think if there, you know, we send a bunch of our graduates on to the JAG Corps, for example, and one of the things I hope that class is useful for is for aspiring JADs to actually figure out just how aspirational their JADness is. I think the course is also useful sort of in a way it's going to be a kind of admin-y class because a lot of what we're going to talk about is the relationship between Article 3 courts and non-Article 3 courts, the military just being one example. The far more prominent example of non-Article 3 federal courts is federal administrative agencies. So I think there will be stuff that's useful in that class no matter what, but it's certainly tilted toward military justice and national security issues.
Laura? I'll ask Professor Grossman about this specifically for the drug, but if you're not sure you want to stay in D.C., how careful do you be if you focus a lot on admin stuff? Like, do you need to be more that?
Sure. I mean, admin stuff is useful everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think it's certainly the case that there's more professional stuff here for folks with a very heavy admin profile. Everywhere where there's law, right, there are rules, there's regulations, there's people who have to interact with state and federal government agencies. And so admin matters everywhere. It just matters so much more here.
Yeah, so admin matters everywhere, and plus there are certain areas of administration. So if you're going to become an administrative lawyer who's writing comments and petitions to the agency,
here's the place to be.
Here's the place to be. But there's a lot of people who are securities lawyers, environmental lawyers, who have to understand the underlying administrative, the organic statutes and stuff that aren't in D.C.
Do you guys know, after D.C., where the most environmental law lawyers in this country are?
House, New Mexico.
Close. That's high. San Francisco. Why San Francisco? Because that's where the Ninth Circuit is. Right, and if you're an environmental lawyer, you'd much rather file in, you know, the Ninth Circuit than anywhere else in the country, although that's changing. It's true. I mean, if you want to actually interact with the agency, D.C. is the place to be, but if it's just about, like, admin stuff, everywhere.
And a study came out recently.
I still don't find the study.
Yeah. Am I reporting correctly? They asked, look, God knows what the methodology was, but they asked lawyers, recently graduated lawyers from around the country, what class proved to be most useful or that you're most glad you took or something, yeah. And 27% said administrative law, which was the second highest, I think, of any of them.
The BA was the highest?
I think they asked people who live in D.C. Like, we asked 100 lawyers in D.C., what class is most, because, anyway.
No, but there's also state administrative procedures.
Yep.
You know, I'm not surprised, actually. I mean, if you really, really survey the entire range of lawyers and what lawyers do, and count people who are representing immigrants and people who are representing Social Security claimants and, you know, and everything, there's administrative law really soaks our system. So you won't be sorry you know what you learn in administrative law.
Probably time for, like, one or two more questions. Unless we've just answered everything. Will the next make it to these conference files? I don't know. Yeah.
I had a question regarding writing seminars, and I'm potentially going to be writing my comment this fall. Do you think taking a writing seminar at the same time would be much, or
depends on
the seminar?
Right. How much do you like to write?
I do like to write.
Okay. So, you know, some writing seminars, you don't have to write. The paper doesn't have to be for the FLL writing requirement. So I would, you know, I think it's seminar specific. You know, some professors require that if you take a writing seminar, you have to write a substantial upper level paper. But if you're satisfying the upper level writing requirement elsewhere, you might be able to write a shorter paper for that class. It just depends on the professor.
And in my writing seminar, for example, if you're not done with the paper by the end of the semester, you just take it and complete and finish it second semester.
Well, look at that. So I hope that's helpful. You guys can feel free to email us if you have more questions. We're pretty easy to find. You know, he's the other Professor Grossman. I'm the only professor alive.
Although not the only Steve, but I am the only Rose.
That's true. Yeah. Anyway, so email us if you have more questions. Otherwise, good luck registering. Have fun. Enjoy.